This is the Christmas Eve special edition of the Tax Update podcast. This day, looking at the S Corporation health insurance deduction and what the IRS has now decided is going to be the final answer in that area. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and supporting documents may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use include using the podcast or documents part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information tax practitioners have subscribed to their services. Again, visit them on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. Well, a couple of weeks ago, the IRS issued a new notice related to S Corporation shareholders and insurance. And this notice, 2008-1, is one we want to look at because it's an issue that we had considered in previous podcasts. Now, I had wanted to get this podcast up a little bit earlier, but due to illness and then travel, a couple of things got in the way. And so when the notice came out, I did not get this brought forward right at that time. And I would note for you that subscribe to Lineberg Services that there was a notice sent out, an email update on this sent out to you on their service. It also discussed this change. But I want to go through it and go through some of the history and some of the changes and perhaps update the podcast that we did back in June of 2006 that came out shortly after the infamous headliner came out and walk through where we are with the new ruling, some issues the new ruling brings to light, and some items we need to consider moving forward. Now, those of you who may remember, have been around for a while or have been following the podcast for a while, may remember that back in May of 2006, the IRS issued a headliner. Now, this headliner indicated that the IRS was aware that certain taxpayers had been running with an S corporation. The individual, let's say, was the only employee of the S corporation. It was a one-person operation. That individual had a medical policy in their own name. And the individual was taking the position that, and they otherwise would qualify for the self-employed health insurance deduction, meaning that they didn't have any coverage from their spouse or qualify for coverage from their spouse on a subsidized plan. And they didn't have any other disqualifying event that would cause them to lose their eligibility to participate in the self-employed health insurance deduction. So they would pay those premiums personally, and then they would treat them as self-employed health insurance and deduct them on their 1040. Or perhaps it even have the S corporation. Well, we don't know. The headliner didn't tell us what happens if the S corporation pays it. But the headliner gave us an indication or kind of gave some ideas that even if the S corporation were paying those premiums, they would not be considered self-employed health insurance premiums. Now, that particular headliner, which was on the IRS website right up until the day after the day that Notice 2008-1 was released. And by the way, that headliner I did reproduce from the Google cache in the material for this podcast. If you go get the downloadable materials that we always produce for the podcast, you're going to find a copy of that original May 2006 headliner that the IRS issued. It was headliner volume 163. That headliner held essentially that, in fact, because the plan was not sponsored by the S corporation, there was no self-employed health insurance deduction. In fact, the final paragraph states quite openly, in summary, in contrast to the holding in CCA 2005-24001, now, that was one that the IRS had issued dealing with a sole proprietorship where it was okay for the policy to be in the name of the individual. A shareholder employee is not allowed to purchase health insurance in the shareholder's own name and still obtain the above-the-line deduction benefits of Section 162L. Now, that's essentially the only place in this notice where the IRS told us that it was their position it was impossible to obtain the benefits. Well, it turns out impossible has a slightly different definition for the IRS than we might suspect, at least if you believe the Notice 2008-1, which now tells us was the law all along. And more interestingly, Notice 2008-1 makes no mention of the headliner or nor any mention of the fact that this might be seen by some as a change of position by the IRS. But going back to the history when the headliner came out, you may remember in the original podcast, I suggested there were issues with the headliner. That the headliner, as literally written, if in fact a policy was purchased by the individual paid the premiums, that, yes, I agreed, there was a problem because the plan under Section 162L does have to be established by the S Corporation. But I said nothing in the law suggested that a plan was equivalent to an insurance policy. And in fact, there's a long series of rulings that come out under the issue for the insurance paid for by employees, paid for employees of a corporation, not a 2% owner, that based upon Revenue Ruling 61-146, which has been updated multiple times and is still very good law under the Internal Revenue Code, has never been repealed. In fact, never been removed. The IRS has never said you can't rely on this ruling any longer. And in fact, the IRS has updated the ruling numerous times to correct individuals saying, no, the ruling requires absolutely you ensure the payments went to insurance. But they have done that this decade issued guidance that's clarified the fact that 61-146, where they felt there was a situation where people were abusing it by allowing payments to be made in a way where it didn't have to go to insurance. But clearly the assumption in all of those rulings is that, in fact, 61-146 is still valid law. And under 61-146, an employer, let's make this gentleman a C corporation. The C corporation sole owner could have a policy in that individual's personal name, could have a plan in the corporation where the corporation agrees to either pay the premiums directly to the insurance company or reimburse the employee after a showing, absolute showing, that in fact the premiums were paid for health insurance by the employee and reimburse the employee. And 61-146 makes it clear that as long as you meet those criteria, don't get fancy, don't try to make it so that you could use it in any way, shape, or form for something other than health insurance. If the employee has any ability to use it for something other than health insurance, you do not get the benefit of 61-146. But if you structure it so that happens, and that's fairly easy to do if I control the corporation and I'm the sole owner, then we do get to exclude that amount from the employee's income. My question raised at the time was, since the term plan is used identically in 162 as it is over in the sections under 105 and 106, and because the term plan under those rulings was held to not necessarily be equivalent to the insurance policy, and since 162L was written specifically because of the issue involving the fact that the S Corporation shareholder and the self-employed individual could not get their medical insurance paid like an employee and it was to make up for the employee, didn't it seem reasonable that the term plan had the same meaning under 162L as the term plan did under Revenue Ruling 61-146? And by extension, therefore, shouldn't we be able to do a 61-146 style plan and be able to take the self-employed health insurance deduction for the individual? Now, a member of the California Listserv who had previously worked with the service, had some connections with the service, actually posed the question up the line to the service that bounced around. And the word that got back to her was very simply that, well, we hadn't considered that particular issue when looking at the headliner and kind of we'll get back to you on this one. Well, just here at a little over 18 months later, the IRS has gotten back to us on this one. And what they've gotten back to us is saying, yeah, basically, we think 61-146 applies. Now, I will note to you that they never refer to Revenue Ruling 61-146 in this particular notice. However, when we get to the details of the notice, it is clear that what they are looking at is Revenue Ruling 61-146, a structure that is essentially identical to the 61-146 structure. Or even, to be honest, somewhat more liberal than that structure. Now, notice 2008-1 goes on and gives us four examples of what needs to be done in order for it to get the self-employed health insurance deduction. Now, the basic rules of notice 2008-1 provides that in order to get a deduction for the policy, either the S Corporation must pay the premiums directly to the insurance company by the end of the year in question, or the shareholder must pay the premiums, furnish proof of payment to the S Corporation, and the corporation must reimburse the shareholder for these payments prior to the end of the year. If either of those are correct, then we have to add that amount to the S Corporation shareholder's W-2. Again, the amounts are not subject to FICA, not subject to FUTA, because that's a different definition for FICA and FUTA of what constitutes wages. And there we are allowed to exclude a plan regardless of whether the individual is a 2% shareholder or not. So we exclude it from FICA and FUTA. But we add it to the W-2, and then we can take the deduction. Now, one caveat is that Notice 2008-1 does indicate that adding it into the W-2 is required in order to claim the deduction. And the way the notice reads, it's required even if the policy were in the name of the S corporation itself. Now, I mention that because some tax software has allowed practitioners to, for cases where there was only one shareholder and we didn't worry about multiple classes of stock, just treat that as a disallowed deduction at the corporate level, or treat it as if it had been essential, so therefore it would be included in the shareholder's income because the S corporation wouldn't take a deduction. Then we get a deduction for self-employed health insurance. It would appear that that type of structure may no longer be valid, at least if the notice 2008-1 is meant to rule about that particular issue. The IRS probably believes that they're just restating the prior law that we had, that it needed to be added to the W-2. They had never authorized you to do this, don't deduct it, then take the deduction down below on the 1040 when there's only one shareholder, you know, presumption being we were only concerned about the second class of stock issue. So beware that if you have somebody who's doing that, we may have an issue involved. As well, beware that the other caveat is all these payments have to be made by the end of the year. If you have an S corporation shareholder who has been paying on a personally owned policy and you want to take advantage of this program, that reimbursement is going to have to be made before the clock strikes midnight on December 31st of this year, or you're not going to get the self-employed health insurance deduction for 2007. Now, the IRS gives four examples in Notice 2008-1 about how we would get the deduction and what the cases would be. And I think looking at the four examples is somewhat useful. The first two examples duplicate the guidance, essentially, that we've always known has been there. In example one, the shareholder obtains a health policy in the name of the shareholder and makes the premium payments on the policy himself. The S corporation makes no payments or reimbursements. In that case, there is no self-employed health insurance deduction. Okay? The problem there, as I discussed back in the June 2006 podcast, is there is no plan established for the S corporation. Now, plan does not mean the insurance policy, and the IRS effectively in this notice will agree with that position, but it does mean we need a plan, and the plan, you know, the S corporation has got to pay for the insurance. If the S corporation does not pay for the insurance, you cannot get the self-employed health insurance deduction. So that's a key caveat. Example one reinforces that fact. So note, that also means, again, this is why you have to get those amounts paid before year end. The IRS is making it clear, unless you can show the S corporation paid for the insurance or reimbursed the shareholder prior to the end of the year, you're not going to get the self-employed health insurance deduction. Now, in example two, the S corporation obtains the policy in the name of the S corporation. They pay the premiums. The amounts are added to the W-2 of the shareholder employee, and the shareholder employee reports that amount on their 1040 and deducts that amount as self-employed health insurance on the 1040. In that case, the IRS holds we get the deduction. Again, that's nothing new. We expected that to happen. That's not anything that would not have worked under the prior interpretation, or the headliner would never have disagreed that that's what happened. Example three and four are the two examples that are different, or that certainly go against what most people read that headliner to suggest had to be the answer to the law. In example three, the shareholder obtains a health policy in the name of the shareholder themselves, but the S corporation writes the check for all the premium payments. The S corporation adds that amount to the shareholder's W-2, and the shareholder, of course, reports that on their 1040 and deducts it on their front page of their 1040 as self-employed health insurance. In that particular case, a plan providing for medical coverage for a shareholder has been established by the S corporation, and the deduction under 162L is allowed for that individual. Again, reiterate, we have a policy. The S corporation pays a premium. The policy is written in the name of the individual. The IRS agrees we get that deduction. Oh, yeah, by the way, the effective date of this, all the way back to the effective date of Section 162 to begin with. The IRS, this notice holds indirectly that this has applied ever since the self-employed health insurance deduction existed in the code. Example four says a shareholder obtains a policy in their own name. The shareholder makes the payments to the insurance company and then furnishes proof of premium payments to the S corporation. The S corporation reimburses the shareholder for the premium payments. At that point, the S corporation will add that amount to the shareholder's W-2. The shareholder reports that amount as income, takes the 162L deduction. The IRS agrees that this also is a plan for purposes of 162L, and the deduction is allowed. Now, the IRS goes on to note that you might have amended returns for prior years. My problem with that is, unfortunately, you may have it if you had in fact been paying the premiums, but then not deducting them or treating them as a distribution to the shareholder. If you had been doing that, so the S corporation actually paid the premiums in the prior years and you had filed those prior year returns, not claiming the deduction, you can go back and amend those returns. You need to amend the, you need to probably change the S corporation reporting. You might need to amend the W-2s as well. And you would need to amend the taxpayer's 1040. This is going to be a bit of work, as you might suggest. But if you do that on all the returns involved in this transaction, we're making the changes, you are supposed to note, filed pursuant to Notice 2008-1, to indicate why you are filing these amendments and to speed up, hopefully, the processing of the claim. My problem is many taxpayers who believe the notice probably did not have the S corporation pay the premiums or reimburse them for them. And reading the notice literally, if by the end of 2006, you didn't have the S corporation pay the premiums or the S corporation make the reimbursement, it would appear there is no self-employed health insurance deduction. Similarly, if you had in prior years been taking a position that didn't qualify because the insurance policy was not in the name of the company, you have to look at the years that are potentially closed. And finally, if you had been agreeing with that and you'd been making payments in the S corporation, you had more than one shareholder, you probably had a concern for disproportionate distributions. And therefore, it probably turned around, you told the shareholders to make the payments personally. So it seems to me it's going to be very difficult to qualify for an amended return under these provisions. But if you do, the IRS has made it clear you can amend the return. What does this tell us? Well, it tells us a couple of things. First, I think many people in many tax services read far beyond the headliner as to what the headliner said versus what the headliner really, you know, had its backup or the reason why the headliner came to the conclusion it did. Second, IRS website postings are not exactly, let's be honest, under this particular viewpoint, necessarily the most heavily vetted options that go through the IRS's process for review. The fact that the IRS, when the question came up about 61-146, essentially we got the note back saying, well, we hadn't really thought about that one. And the fact that we then, 18 months later, get a notice that after thinking about it says, yeah, right, this doesn't apply, indicates that we do have to be aware of the fact that merely because the IRS notice has come out or the IRS has posted something in an informal, and the web things are just as informal as instructions or more informal probably than the instructions and the IRS publications, that we need to, as those with professional responsibilities, look at the underlying documents and look for the support. I've always had the position that if you even under the more likely than not standard of 6694A that existed, I always was of the position that the authoritative documents that count for purposes of 6694 penalties all came down on the side of this being deductible. All came down on saying 61-146 works and the support was there. That headliner, as I said at the time, and I would continue to say, I don't believe that headliner met the requirements that we now live under for giving written advice to a client because that advice was misleading and in fact was an error and was not withdrawn by the IRS until this far along. I have some real issues with that staying on the website as long as it did, considering the IRS eventually had to become aware that maybe that was being interpreted far beyond where it should go. Nevertheless, it was there, and you had to look at it, but far too many practitioners I knew of took that as gospel, absolutely, this is it, this is the rule, and there is no other position allowed. Clearly, other positions were valid, and clearly now the IRS, in what is a now more formal and binding document, has said, you're right, it always has been that way, this is how it works. So be sure. The other thing to remember is we do have actions that need to be taken very, very shortly. The clock is running on 2007 because Notice 2008-1 makes it clear that the payments have to be made this year. I believe that is correct interpretation of the law. The S corporation has to make the payments, and those payments are going to have to be made this year. But the problem is that's a very short time frame for you to make changes if, in fact, your taxpayers had been advised or you had advised your taxpayers that they could not take this deduction, and now suddenly you've got to get it fixed before the clock tolls a week from today. And the clock rolls over, and we're into 2008. So keep that in mind. Watch for it. Now, the other things to remember on S corporations, don't forget, we do now have an S corporation late filing penalty that was added in the mortgage relief bill. Watch for that for next year for when you're working on taxes. Also, the Technical Corrections Act corrected a little quirk we had in the S corporations, where an S corporation who made a charitable contribution of appreciated property, we had the law changed so our basis was only reduced by the amount of the contribution that was made, but they never fixed the part that limited our deduction to the basis coming in. So on a ridiculous quirk, we ended up with a deduction we couldn't take, even though we still had lots of basis if you literally read the law. Congress has now retroactively fixed that quirk, so it's now clear that we get to take the deduction and the basis. As long as we have basis, we ignore the difference between the basis and the fair value in that situation. So those were a couple of late year-end S corporation changes that have impacted us, and it may make some changes to the advice you've just, isn't it nice knowing Congress changes it this late, just given the client regarding this year's tax return. This has been the Tax Update for December 24th, 2007, Christmas Eve Special Edition. Remember, the Tax Update podcast is brought to you by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Be sure to visit them for information of interest to tax practitioners. And may all of you have an enjoyable holiday season, and may all of you have an enjoyable, as if such can happen, tax season approaching, at least let you have a successful one. This is the Tax Update.